Welcome to Light a Candle meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. I'm Gabriel, a compulsive overeater. This is our preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrines. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive overeating and to carry the message of recovery to those who still suffer. I have asked Margot to read how it works.
I'm Margot, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Margot.
Hi. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way. But we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. 1. We admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. Admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. Were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the compulsive overeater, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear 3 pertinent ideas. A, that we were compulsive overeaters and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our obsession. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
Thanks, Margot. Are there any newcomers here? A couple new faces. Are you a newcomer? What is your name? Charlie Lane. Welcome. Anyone else? No. Okay. Anyone in their first 30 days of recovery? Oh, what is your name? Hi, Paulina. Welcome. All right. On that note, it's time for a chip person.
Hi, I'm Kate. I'm a compulsive overeater and a bulimic. And we give chips at this meeting. So if you're going to take a chip, please state your name and your disease in the microphone. Does anyone want to take a newcomer chip under 30 days? Anyone? Okay. 30-day chip? 60 days? What? Yay!
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Debbie.
And a sugar addict.
Here you go.
Congratulations. Hi, I'm Marcy, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Marcy.
Okay, 90 days? 6 months? 9 months? Any birthdays I wasn't told about? Okay, thanks for letting me be of service.
All right, thanks, Kate. It's time for our seventh tradition. While May, the treasurer, passes the baskets, I have asked Kathy to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, I'm Kathy, compulsive overeater.
Hi,
hello. 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop compulsive eating. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Kathy. All right, now it's time for the speaker section. First, a reminder to everyone to please turn off all cell phones and pagers out of courtesy to the speaker, and our main speaker, Roz, tonight gets to share her experience, strength, and hope until 6:25. Actually, we're going to stop a little early for the delegates' report, and you can keep going or stop for questions at 6:15. Please help me introduce Roz.
Hi, my name is Roz. I'm really grateful, upstanding, and compulsive overeater. And thank you, Roy, for the honor of me being here tonight. For the newcomer, you've just walked into a life that is beyond your wildest dreams. I really mean it. It doesn't mean that you're going to have this big house on the hill looking over the ocean and all the money in the bank and everything. It means you'll be able to live life on life's term, to cope with it without going to the food. So I'm going to go back. I've been in this program since May 26, 1987. I've given away 200 pounds. And it talks in the AA 12 and 12 and in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous about the person who was dead when they walked in, and I was. I literally had about 6 months to live, the doctors had told me. I knew that because I had gotten so ill that I couldn't even keep food down because the fat surrounded my liver. I had a heart attack 10 years before at 40 and kept eating. I had angina, couldn't walk without a pill. I would never have been able to get up those stairs over here. Forget it. I had high blood pressure. I had all these neurological disorders because of my eating, and I couldn't stop eating. There was no way I could stop eating. I tried everything. I had no willpower, everybody told me. What was wrong with me? I went for that pregnant urine thing. I went every single day, 5 days a week for a shot on Hawthorne Boulevard at 7 o'clock in the morning and waited till they opened at 8. At 8 o'clock, I saw the doctor, got my shot, and left, and the weight came right off. I lost 130 pounds in 6 months that time. And that way I was able to show up at my cousin's wedding. On the pictures around, you're going to see pictures of me. The dates are before I came in here, when I lost weight before, and you're going to see pictures of me at anorexia, because that's where I got into this program. You know what? It was fun while it lasted, but it wasn't really fun. It was really sick. I got really sick. But so I did that little diet thing, and I couldn't understand what happened, because one day I was baking cookies with my little girl, and I went back to the diet doctor, and somehow he didn't help me anymore, because I was off on a tangent, and that's what I always did. I lose weight for a while. I go to Weight Watchers. I go to Tops, where they call you a pig, and they put you in a little pig pen, and it was just, I was a mess. I couldn't stop eating, and I thought something was so wrong with me. I dyed my hair red. When I lost all that weight, what's wrong with me? I have red hair now. Right, brand new clothes my dad bought me, and I couldn't do it. I was so ashamed of myself. I thought I was stupid, dumb, and a piece of shit. And I didn't think I was worth anything. And I was told that for all my life. So by the time I got to Overeaters Anonymous, I actually had that tape in my head, and I really believed it. And my mother used to say, wait till everybody gets to know you, who you really are, and then you're not going to have any friends, which I never had any friends. But I did that eating all my life. I hid behind buildings when I was a little girl, took food from people's houses, stole money from my parents. You know, I had a charge account, the homeless man. You have to be old enough like me to remember the homeless man. He used to come, like a little baking place, he used to come over to our house once or twice a week, pull out his little drawers, and I charged everything to my mother. And in 30 days, oh, man, was I in trouble. Was I hit? Was I beat up? Was I really in bad trouble? It didn't matter to me because I had a habit. You know how old I was then? 9 years old. 9 years old, and she took me to diet doctor to get pills, and then it began. Whoa, I couldn't keep the weight off after that. My mother kept me really controlled, really controlled. And when I got to be 17, I got married. I got pregnant and then got married, and then I was really ashamed of the whole family because you don't have a baby. You don't get pregnant in 1953 before you're married. You're supposed to keep your legs crossed, my mother told me. And that's what she said. Never knowing that I'm an incest survivor, that my uncle raped me for over 3 years. I found that out in these rooms. And I'm here to tell you, I could get through anything any of you can. I am a miracle that I got through all of this stuff. And I didn't have to die overweight. And I have to die from this disease. Because I was so dead, spiritually, emotionally, and physically. And I didn't want to live. And I took an overdose 2 times. I was a pill addict. And to just show you how the food was, and this is moving forward, my uncle died the night before Thanksgiving 1 year. It was at the cemetery. It was raining, and my little sister got caught in the traffic. And she was in the catering business, and she came up with blueberries all over her. The whole truck was filled with blueberry cheesecakes. I hate blueberries. Okay. We got into that place, and we sat in the car. The three of us, my husband and my brother-in-law, and pushed it in with our hands out of the boxes to push the feelings down of losing my uncle and seeing everybody cry. This is at the cemetery at Hillside, the little Jewish family eating cheesecake at the cemetery. And, boy, you know, and that's how the food was. Anytime I could grab any food, and it had to be sugar most of the time, I just stuffed it down because I never, ever thought I could stop eating. I never did. I was a loser. I was supposed to never be born. They should never have had me. My mother used to, oh my God, she used to get on the phone and go, hello, is this a reform school? Could you please come and pick up my daughter? And I lived in a lot of terror. My grandfather said I shouldn't have been born. And the whole thing, I never was liked by my family. And but you know what? Now that I think about it, I think I never liked myself. I hated myself, so I just went along with the whole thing. I hated my sister Gail because she was this perfect child, and she got all the love I thought. And she was perfect, and I was so imperfect. And so there's a lot of reasons I ate. You know what? I love my parents. I wish they were here. I totally had to go all the way back. For me, I had to go back. The day I got into program, my son said, you better get a good therapist. I had to go to outside help because there was too much in me of what had happened that I didn't know about. And I went 4 or 5 times a week, and she was 12 steps. She was in this program and in Al-Anon. And she taught me that I was worthwhile. And the people in this program loved me, but mostly it was all an intensity. In 15 months, I lost 220 pounds. I didn't know who I was. It was like, oh, no program, no spirituality, no steps. I would not recommend this to anyone. It was like somebody took me, stripped all my armor off, and threw me on the desert to take care of myself. It was like Rip Van Winkle, like I was Rip Van Winkle. I woke up one day, and I was thin. And I didn't know how to be. I didn't know how to talk to people. I didn't even talk. I didn't even know how. I didn't know anything. And one day, I was wearing the same color boots, but 2 wrong ones. I thought something was wrong with my foot. I was going to go to the doctor. One was high and one was low. And I knew I was losing my mind. And my therapist said, I want to put you in the hospital so you'd be able to work through these feelings in a safe place. I said, no, I don't need a hospital. So the next day, I was listening to Neil Diamond driving on Westwood and Pico at 8:30 in the morning and ran my car into someone else's car this way across Westwood and Pico and ran into Nordson's window. I smashed my whole car up and I was okay. And I remember saying, if I'm going to die, at least I fit into Nordstrom's clothes. That's how much recovery I had. There was none except for the physical. And I was on a high because I already was so anorexic by that time. And I had this abstinence where if I ate one bite of popcorn, that was my dinner. And I never was hungry. I never was hungry. I think it was just that liver thing. And I also have to say, it was really fun wearing those short little size 5 skirts. There's a picture of me going around in my leather outfit. I was able to be the child I never got to be. I think that's where I was, and I loved it. But I got very, very sick. My lips were blue. My hands were blue. My body temperature went down. And in that hospital, and it was the psych unit, and I still wouldn't eat. They had to make me everything sugar-free, sugar-free Jell-O. And it was very, very... It was absolutely terrifying, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. Because in that place, I found out what happened to me about my past. And I was able to be in a safe place with safe people and find out so I wouldn't have to, so I could be alive, so I could be okay. And I worked really hard in there. When I went to get out, I didn't even want to get out. It was just a safe environment. And I was the only one with the eating disease. There were alcoholics, addicts, people that were very abused, and I was able to stay in that room and be honest. And that's where I think my program really started. And when I got out of there, my sponsor and I started working the steps. I knew that if I didn't work those steps, I'd be out of this program. There was no way. And the first year, I didn't read the big book. I lost that because it was the big book and the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous of AA have kept me alive today. You know, my son that brought me into this program, who had lost 130 pounds, he'd been in 15 months. He's speaking all over. He looked fabulous. And we even spoke together. He's out of here, and he's like 150 pounds overweight, and he's into his disease. And my husband's into this disease. He almost has died several times last year from it, and there's nothing I can do. I'm powerless. This disease is, to me, the worst. It's demoralizing, and it's a killer, and it's a slow, painful death. I didn't go out of my house. I was ashamed of myself. I missed many weddings. I'd call up at the last minute and say, oh, I have a migraine headache, or oh, I have this. I couldn't be in. I couldn't be at my kids' PTA meetings because I felt so ashamed of myself. I broke chairs. I wasn't allowed to sit in chairs at my mother's house, my aunt's houses, because I'd break them, they said. I broke toilet seats, and anyone that's a 100-pounder knows what I'm talking about. That feeling, it's bad enough not feeling a part of life, but not being able to fit into the theater where they had to come at the end of the theater, downtown L.A., and I have the man take me out of the chair because they had to take the arms off because my dress got caught in the seat. are in San Francisco when I got caught in a revolving door. You know, until I lost the weight and worked on my steps, I didn't know how bad it was. And then I started to be, oh, I couldn't believe that I thought I did it, that it was my fault because I couldn't stop eating. I thought that it was my fault that I got off the freeway 10 times to get food, to get back on the freeway, to get to Torrance, to my sister's. I just couldn't stop. And in here, I learned I could live without the binging and without compulsively eating. And my program is far from perfect, my food. Believe me, it's far from perfect. There are days that the food is hard. I don't have those cravings at all anymore, like it says in the big book. But some days, my food's a little bit sloppy. And you know what? I just let it be because I was so hard on myself for the first 5 years. And what I want to talk is about the miracles today, about the miracles that's happened to me in my life. I can't. When my mom died when I was 18 months in program, I moved into her house, and it was owned by my sisters and me, and we had money. I spent it. I was lovely. I'm a compulsive spender because I finally got to get clothes that fit and all this stuff, and I made a lot of mistakes. And then about 7 years ago, we lost everything. And my sister bought a condo in Orange County so I could live there. So my husband and I could live there. But there was just no money, nothing. And I've been able, and I've never got trained in anything. Today I know I'm smart. That is a major thing for me. I know I'm lovable, huggable, and I love myself. Not an ego love, but I like what God has given me. You know, I like who I am today. And so I came out to Orange County, and there was no meetings, and I quickly started to eat. And in a few months, I put on 37 pounds, which is gone now. But it was my sponsor, Natalie, that got me to lay on that floor and cry because she said, this disease has got you back again. If you're telling me you're gaining weight and you're not eating like you did before, it doesn't matter. You're still eating more food. And for a 100-pounder, I could gain 20 pounds on a weekend from a bunch of peaches if I wanted to. And so I started a meeting because I didn't like the meeting. There was no meetings out there. That has saved my life, doing service. I've done service since the time I got into this program. It has kept me here because when you do service, you show up, you suit up, and you do your commitment. And when you sponsor, you help another person by God giving me what he's given me, I'm able to carry the message. And so I started these meetings, and the most incredible people there, I started this Sunday night 100-pounding meeting, and not one person has refused to come out there. People come from Santa Barbara. I mean, it's unbelievable to me. And what's happened to me is I started babysitting. I started working whatever I can to make money because we don't have any money. It was very hard for me. There was times I had to eat at Costco for dinner on a hot dog, which is in my abstinence, okay? So don't tell me I shouldn't eat a hot dog. And and I grew, and it was, I learned what humility meant. Humility was to be teachable, but it was meant for me. I allowed people to help me. Well, I was the one that gave everything. You want my dress here? Do you like my watch? I have done that. I've given away watches to people that say, I like your watch in this program. I did it all. I have, because I learned, I thought that was loving them, but it wasn't. It was people pleasing. Today I know the difference between people pleasing and being generous and kind in another way and helping another person. 3 years ago, my tooth fell out right here in the front. Now, even in the early times of the program, I wouldn't have shown up at a meeting with my tooth missing. I wouldn't have, because it would be how I look without a tooth, okay? But I did, and it was the night of my belly button birthday, and the basket went around, and it was filled with cards from people saying, and nobody put their name on it. This is for your from your tooth fairy. Thank you for helping me. This is from your tooth fairy. In the mail, people sent me over $650 to get my tooth done. You tell me, not my family, not my daughter did help me, but nobody else, not my family, not anybody, but the people of Overeaters Anonymous that loved me enough to do that for me. What? Tell me anywhere we could go to do that. Anywhere. That I was only living there a couple years, and that's what happened. And I keep asking people, did you do this? They go, none of your business. You know, none of your business. I tried to figure it out with the handwriting and stuff, but I couldn't. And I thought, No, and I finally just started sharing at every meeting about how grateful I was. And that's the way it's been. My husband got sick. I've got my wonderful friend that picks me up and takes me in. I'm wonderful friends here that are there for me. I never have to be alone again. Oh, my God, what a concept. Me, who was alone all my life, who never thought that I was worth anything, who thought I had no self-esteem, no self-worth, no anything. But the minute I put down the fork, all of a sudden, self-esteem came back. I started to believe in myself. And it took me a long time in this program to believe in myself because I was at the lowest part of feeling like a piece of shit. I did. I never felt that I was good enough. I never thought I was enough. I thought I was just, So, so I have these meetings. I have the people. Every time I'm broke, and I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, God sends a little job in my life. God does this, God does that. He just does for me the miracles. And when I'm crying, I have a friend to help me. When I'm lonely, I've got God, and God fills me up, and my prayers, and His program. And yesterday, let's see, 3 nights ago, I fell down in my kitchen, and I really hurt myself. I injured my nerve, my sciatica nerve. And, God, I was really in a lot of pain. I went to my meeting anyways on Thursday night, and I talked about it, and this wonderful guy there said, I want to take you to my chiropractor, which I've heard these bad things, you know. Mm-hmm. But I was at such a point of pain, the incredible pain, that I trusted him. He took me yesterday. He paid for the doctor. He sat there, and he soothed me while I was afraid, because I heard these bones cracking back, you know, and he helped me. This guy, 36 years old, that younger than my son, that was there for me. My God, you know, and the doctor said, could I have a hug? Because you are really brave. Cause it just, and he put me back in alignment, whatever that is. And I still have got some problems, but I know now that because he took the stress off that nerve, that I could heal with God's power. And that's what's happened. 4 years ago when I moved out there, I filled a pot of boiling water on my left foot, you know, and all the nerve endings were torn out. And I went to the burn center every day and had my debride. I never took a pain pill because it didn't help. And I did this healing that I learned, this self-healing that I learned. It's not self. It's talking to God and to the angels in my life. I would not be here today if it wasn't for all of you in this program and for my God. There's no way I could have stood not having money for lipstick, not being able to buy a pair of shoes. And the best gift I've ever got is the blessing of my 3 granddaughters. I'm able to be at my son's graduation, my daughter's wedding, my daughter's graduation, and the birth of all 3 of these girls. They're 7 and a half, 4 and a half, and 2. And I get to be on the floor and play with them. I get to go to the carnival and ride with them on the scary ride that I always used to be afraid of because they're not scared. I get to be in the water with them the other day and swim with them and have them jump to me and go, oh, I love you, Grandma. You're my best friend. If I tell you that's not worth it and I wouldn't have had it if it wasn't for Overeaters Anonymous, there's no way I would have been dead. And I'm able to crawl on the floor with these little girls. And when I fell the other night, they heard me, and they came out from the bedroom. They were over, and like, Grandma, are you okay? Can I help you up? And I like, I have this thing when I fall. I don't want anyone to help me. It comes from the old days when I fell when I was fat. I would break my bones and stuff. And you know what? It's a miracle I didn't break my hip, the doctor said. But the biggest miracle is that I made a pitch, and this wonderful man said, I'm going to take you to my chiropractor, and you have to say yes. And I trusted him. And so what I'm talking about is much more than the weight that we get. It's being able to walk with integrity, dignity, and to be able to say, yes, I will take the help, when I couldn't have done this 10 years ago. Never would I have done this. I just didn't do that. You know, I'm able to make a dinner and have people help me with it and bring food in, when the old me didn't have to do it all. And I don't have an ego. Thank you, God, because I know that would kill me. But my job is to do God's will. And I've learned for my friend Lee to pray before dinner. Pray before I eat. And then thank you, God. And in the morning, I pray. I read my books. I work with a lot of people. I work really with a lot of people. And it's not me that can make someone abstinent, because I can't. I don't have that power. If I had that power, boy, I'd be all over the world. But I don't have the power to make someone abstinent, to make my age different, to stop the wars, to make peace in the world. All I can do is carry the peace that I have in me and the serenity that this program gave me to carry it to other people. And that is a gift. It is the most precious gift I've ever had. 50 years before I got in here, I was almost 51 when I got in here, I hated my life. I never wanted to live. Each day I'd say, God, please let me die. Because I didn't want to live. I had nothing to live for. That's how I thought. That's why I was not happy. And today I can be happy, joyous, and free in the middle of calamity and chaos. I don't know how, I mean, tell me how that happens. We all know it's about a higher power who I choose to call God. I never knew this could happen to someone like me who couldn't stop eating. And my pockets were filled with pills and food. And that's how I walked around. This giant woman in a 28 and a half dress, in a, I think, 54 bra. When I lost all the weight, my breasts got smaller. They looked like parachutes to me, my bras, you know. And well, I should have saved one. And and the best gift I have is friends. What a miracle. Murray, you are, everyone in this room, Helen, I don't want, and Lee, Roy, all of you who've been in my life, a part of my recovery, and Kathy, and you, and a newcomer who gets in this program and starts to write and journal and does the steps in 6 months. What a miracle you are. What a miracle we are today. I'm going to conclude with, don't leave here before the miracle, because if it could happen to someone like me, this cheat, liar, compulsive liar, kleptomaniac, see, what else? Everything that you could think of, I did. One of those dresses is a dress I stole, the pink one. Okay? Before OA. Of course, that's why I looked like that there. Okay, that's it. I want to share. Thank you for asking me. I'll open it up for questions. So, questions, anybody? Go ahead, women first. Go ahead. I didn't have a higher power, because my higher power wouldn't listen to me. He didn't make my dad well. And then I had to take care of my mom. So, no, I didn't believe in a higher power, because how could he do all these things to me? How could he make me fat? My higher power was food. Did I answer your question? Mm-hmm. For a long time, I didn't. But then all of a sudden, the miracles started happening, and I didn't want food, and I knew that I had to be something better than myself, because I could walk in a bakery, in a deli, or anywhere, and not want to eat everything in sight. That was what God did. Okay. What character changes? Is that what you're telling me? Change in me? Is that what you said? Okay. Honesty, the big one. Honesty, being true to myself and helping other people without doing it because I wanted something back. That was a big one for me. Because it was a big one. In the beginning, I just bought everybody presents all the time. I wanted everyone to like me, and I had cards in my purse, chips in my purse, and everybody, I knew everybody's 30-day, 90-day, everybody got a present from me, because I wanted everyone to love me. So that changed a lot. And also, a light came in me. I feel like I have this inner light. It could be my pacemaker I got 5 years ago. But I don't think so. It's really a God light. I can feel it. Yes?
A question about prayer and meditation. How do prayers go for you? Like conversation? Have you done that?
No. Now?
Yeah.
How do my prayers go? Elaborate on it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I wake up in the morning. Oh, this is my new one since my husband got sick. Is the first prayer I go, thank you, God, I'm alive. I do that every day for 15 years. And then I go, help me to be tolerant, kind, loving, and nice to him today, and not look at his food and not react. This is my, this is the truth. And then I read my books and I talk to God and I do meditation where I just, I do visualization. I can't be still. My head doesn't be still. That kind, but if I visualize the ocean and visualize a light of God, I'm really okay. That's when I get it. And I do all day long. I thank God. I do all these mantras. Bless you, God. Thank you, God. Or help me, God. I can't do this alone. I do that in the morning sometimes. Especially if I wake up, you know, down, feeling down. Does that answer? Okay, that's a good question. How did I surrender the control when I got into anorexia? I faced my uncle who had abused me for 3 years. And I guess I couldn't eat because of it. It was one of the biggest underlying issues. So I went to see him where everything took place in his lingerie shop. And I had a tape recorder with me. And I had two people from program and my husband and my two sisters. And once I faced him and went through this whole thing in my family, I started to be able to eat. And I also went to a holistic nutritionist to learn how to eat because I had robbed my whole body of all the nutrients. I was really a mess. I got chronic fatigue syndrome. I was really sick from not eating the proper foods. I don't want to ever go through that again either because my life was hell with the overeating. But also, I don't want to ever get to that point again where I was so sick from anorexia. Yes, Helen, what'd you want? Oh. Yeah. A thumbnail sketch? It says 3 meals a day, and I can have a snack if I want. Fruit. I do usually have something. And I can have, you know what, it changes. Sometimes I leave out bread, and sometimes I have bread. Or sometimes I leave out something else. I don't have recreational sugar. I don't have candy bars, ice cream, and cookies. I don't look on labels. I don't weigh and measure. I've already been that way. I just want to have an abstinence that's guilt-free today. I don't want to be afraid of food anymore. But I don't eat, of course, I don't eat, you know, a banquet. Who else? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. When my disease comes back, or if I'm eating too much, I made up this thing years ago. Here's how it goes, okay? This is the way I do it, okay? It says, Fat Rosalind. That's my name. It says, I'm going to have you back. You're not going to fit in your car. Throw out your clothes. Throw out your shoes. You're going to be breaking things again. You won't be able to go to OA. And I write that letter, and boy, not the same way every time, but I write something similar. And then I have God write my disease letter, which says, I'm all powerful. I love my Rosie. This will not happen. Leave her alone. And I do that kind of, I do a lot of journaling. And I don't do it it's either every day or all day, or I don't do it for days. It depends where I'm at. But when I feel like nauseous and something's going on, I have to journal. And I've been crying a lot. I've been grieving, which it's a normal thing to grieve. For the past, for what I thought was going to happen, for where I'm at now at my age. So I've been grieving a lot. That's really important because I don't have to eat. I just can cry. And I cry a lot. I don't know. Yes, Helen.
When you gained your
37
pounds in Orange County, what do you think that you learned most of all from that?
Not to rest on my laurels. Not to rest on my laurels. Not to make fun of the meetings that were there, because they were how meetings, and it wasn't that how was bad, it was the people, There were these old people, like 80, and they were like, not talk to me. And I cried because I was new there. No one talked to me. And I mean, except like four people that I'm still friends with that, you know. But I got mad and I got resentful that I was there, that I made this mistake, that I lost everything. I got mad at my husband and I got mad at myself. And resentment caused me to eat. One day, it was like, oh, I'm cured. So the resentment, the anger, I turned it inward. And then I also wasn't able to accept where I was. And that was a big thing for me to accept. It was a mistake. I'm not a mistake. Things happen. Today I wouldn't move back here and have what I have and give up what I have there. It sounds weird, baby, but I wouldn't give up where I'm at now, what I have, my friends there and everything, for the house that I had with the swimming pool and all of it. I wouldn't. I've never, ever known love like this. I have never known anything like this in my entire life. So it would be nice if I had some security, but you know what? It's okay as long as God gives me the strength to keep working. And that's what I was afraid of. I couldn't do that when I fell the other day. I got scared that I wouldn't be able to work, that I wouldn't be able to babysit or anything. And it got taken care of. God took care of it. Did that answer? Yes.
Is there time, even so long, that you ever get sick of all
these
meetings?
Oh, yeah. Sick of going to meetings? Yes. Sick of getting 25 phone calls a day telling me about their husband, their children, and all the stuff except what's going on with the food? Yeah. Are people that don't work the steps calling me and crying and they haven't worked the steps? I get sick of it, but you know what? I'm supposed to be here. That's very good, Helen. I'll never get sick enough not to go. Sometimes I just get tired sometimes, but I go there because I want to be of service. So maybe I could be of service that night if I don't feel good of what's going on, you know? And when my husband got really sick, he's been sick almost a year. I got into a very bad depression, and I went for outside help for it. I couldn't stop crying and screaming and panic attacks and stuff. But I didn't go to the food. I went to a professional person to get me help when I would have always gone to the food before. But I'll never be sick and tired of OA. I'm sick and tired of the eating. I don't want to go from where I am now, which is heaven, to the hell that I was in before. That was death. Yes, Mark.
Could you share how you've worked steps 4 through 9
with inventory on 3D? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I will. I'm sticking to this. Step 4, I did at the end of my second year. And it was like, I couldn't do it according to the big book. I just couldn't. And so at that time, my therapist said to me, why don't you just do a biography? And it was huge. My God. And I was able to just give away all the horrible, yucky secrets that I thought that anybody wouldn't be friends with me. All of it. I also let my first sponsor go because she's now a very good friend of mine because she was too good and I didn't want to tell her how bad I was. That was it. So I got a second sponsor now of course she knows everything, and I did that. So that was, and then I asked God all the time to remove my character defects. And you know what? A lot of times just my humanness comes out and I get, you know, I react to stuff, you know. But I don't call people names on the road. I don't give anyone the finger anymore. And I don't do any of that stuff. I was a rageaholic like my father. I didn't realize how insane I was about everything. And then I do a 10-step. I could do that from the big book now. You know, Helen taught me that. I learned from everybody else. And so I could do that, steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So if I do a daily amends, if I do something wrong, and I do, I don't go to bed mad, I'll say I'm sorry. Most of the time to my husband. I make that phone call. Yes, Roy. Oh, yeah.
How did you work through the fear of losing friendships with having people pleasing removed?
Losing friendships in the program? Mm-hmm. They were all in my life for a reason. Every person, I'm telling you, I've had a lot of weird stuff that went on with different people here. And she knows, especially my second sponsor, who's no longer around. But I got through that. And you know what? God puts people in my life for a reason. And I learn from them. Each person's a learning experience for me. I get to learn well, how to talk better, what to know, how to stay away from this kind of person again. Who to go to? Today I could trust my, most of the time I still get problems with people, you know, I'll think someone's okay and they're not. But I got away from that fear. I'm not gonna lose my good friends. Cause I have to be honest. They're honest with me, I'm honest with them. Does that answer it? No, 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 no. I don't get any desire to give them my watch or something, unless I want to. I only have one watch now. I did get a new one for my birthday, but I lost it already. I also discovered I have ADD in this program. Oh, yes, Mandy.
How do you deal with, how do you not get angry when somebody is absolutely wrong?
How do you not get angry when someone's absolutely wrong? Do I want to be happy, or do I want to tell them to, you know, F off? I don't talk. I just walk away now. I'm learning to walk away. I've had my own family things happen, and I'll write a letter. I write a letter. It's, you know, I write a letter, and I read the letter, and I tear the letter up, and I'm okay. I don't mail the letters. I don't push the send button. Oof. You know, and that's how I'm able to do it. Because there's a lot of stuff in my own family that's hard for me to deal with. And I know she's laughing. She knows who. Not my husband, but other members of my family. And, God, it's like, it's amazing to me how I could walk away when I really want to tell that person off. I do. I really want to tell him what I think of him. But I don't. Because I don't want to be him. That's how I do it. As soon as I'm mad at someone or someone, I think to myself, do I want to be that person? Because I learned this. No, I don't want to be the person. I want to be who I am. That lets me off from being that angry. I let the person have their anger. I go, okay, God, he's spiritually not fit. I'm learning this more and more. I've learned a lot this last year, this last 2 years, since Lee moved down there. Yeah. I have learned a lot because I listen. I never listened before. I didn't listen. Helen taught me a lot. When I got in trouble with food, she taught me I'm mentally and bodily different than my fellows. And I say that all the time if I want to eat something. In chapter 3, I'm mentally and bodily different from my fellows. I think this addiction is the worst. That's my opinion. Because we're dealing with food all the time. We go out to eat in fellowship. We go out after. We go out before. But I'm with people that are safe, and I don't look at anybody's food. Everybody gets to eat what they want to eat. You know? Does that answer it? I don't want to be right. Let the person have it. If you think you're right, go read the big book and where it says justifiable anger. Because I was angry. I thought I was right when we moved there. And I quickly put on that weight.
Well, I know that the answer comes through connecting with God.
Mm-hmm.
If I get angry.
When I got depressed, I couldn't connect real well like that. I just kept believing he's there. I guess I call it blind faith for me. I knew God's there. I knew once I got out of the depression that he would take care of me. But I got so low that I couldn't. I just cried all the time. But everybody knew what was going on. And again, I didn't have to be alone, which is a miracle. They only said, oh, you're depressed. I don't want to be with you. You know, like my family did. They go, people went, Roz, I'm here, I'll pick you up, I'll do this. I can't even believe this miracle. It's like, I know God's here for me because I wouldn't be here keeping off this weight. How could this happen? I'm 66 years old right now. And how could this happen? How could it happen to someone like me who never could stop eating? Who got sick from overeating constantly. I had chews by my bed, by the box. They used to have chews then, you know. You know the chews you take for heartburn? We bought them. We used to buy them at Fedco, like 2 dozen packages. They were by my bed with all the medicines I used to take. And it's not worth it to be angry. I really know that. So I have to work through it and go to the light instead of the darkness. And the anger is darkness, and the light is God. The spirit is God. This is an awesome meeting. Yes.
How
I didn't weigh a measure, even when I got anorexic. I just hardly ate, to tell you the truth. I hardly ate. I'd eat a bowl of soup. I couldn't eat. I think because I was holding all those feelings in about... I was working very hard in therapy, and I was holding all those feelings in about my past. Also, I was nauseous for my liver. I had really bad liver disease. I have chronic liver disease, and but I don't have the bad one. I have the one where you're supposed to rest, and I never rest. So I don't want to rest till I'm too old to rest. I want to enjoy my life. Would a newcomer like to ask a question? I'd be glad to answer anything. I ate more. I was so embarrassed. I was so embarrassed, especially when Lane Brandt, I got to a size 28 and a half and I didn't carry anything bigger. I went to downtown LA in the Lane Brandt basement and wore house dresses. I was so embarrassed. That's how I dealt with it. But when I got here, 3 months before I got into this program, I went to see my son get his birthday candle, his 1 year. At the Lions Club, log cabin, on a Sunday night. I saw in that room something I never experienced. I saw love, 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 and everybody tried to trust at me. But I knew I'd be there sooner or later. That's what kept me going. I remember that night, for the rest of my life, I saw unconditional love. People touching each other's backs, touching each other, hugging, everything. I never knew that existed. I never knew that existed. I never even have to ask someone. When I sit next to someone, everybody rests my back. I rub people's back. I never knew that existed. And I wanted that. More than the weight, I wanted the serenity and the peace that my son had at that time. He got me here. He did. I wish he was here now. I wish he was here now. If I had one wish, it would be to have Richard in this room in recovery today because he's really sick right now. Okay, it's time. So thank you again for letting me share. If you want to ask me any questions, anybody, after, I'll be glad to answer them.
Help me again in thanking Roz for her share. Thank you. Okay, before the secretary's announcements, we have a delegate's report today.
Hi, I'm Nona, compulsive overeater. This is super brief. Three announcements. The OA office is looking for a new manager. The position calls for 22 hours a week. The pay is $12 per hour. And call the office. The number's on the 12-stepper if you're interested. Person need not be in the program. We're looking for a co-chair for this year's birthday party. In order to be the co-chair, you have to be qualified as a board member. I believe that's completion of fourth and fifth steps. And again, numbers on the 12-stepper. And the third and final announcement is that Isabel, who is our young person's board member, is interested in putting together an event involving high school, college kids, and their parents. She's looking for people who know schools or individuals who want this kind of outreach. And her number is on the 12-stepper if you're interested. Thanks for letting me be a service.
I'd like to make an announcement. I'm Sandy, also a reader. We take this meeting. And tickets available for $4.02 for past speakers. Tonight's speaker will be available about 5 minutes after the meeting. Also, there's an event tomorrow at the OA office in Reseda. It's a workshop called What Is My Part? A workshop on steps 6 and 7. It is free. It'll pass the 7th tradition basket. I brought some flyers. Also, the following Sunday on July 7th, there's a big event called Passing on the Park. So I've got all that stuff over the table over here. So come on by and grab one. Thanks.
All right. Roz, did you get your pictures back?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Great. All right. So thank you, Nona. And Secretary's announcements. Thank you to everyone who does service here. Roy books the speakers. He's our chairperson. I'm your secretary. Meg is treasurer. We need a literature person. If anyone's interested, please see me after the meeting. Kate does chips. Nona is our delegate. Sandy does tapes. Did you give a tape? Okay. And Sheila, no, Debbie is lifeline person.
Hi, I'm Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater and your lifeline person for this meeting. First, I want to apologize. I haven't been here for the last couple of weeks, and 1 week I did make arrangements for someone else, but the last two I failed to, so please forgive me. Lifeline is a journal of recovery. It can serve as a meeting between meetings. There's stories written by OA members all over the world, and it's $15 a year, $13 online, and if you're interested, please come see me after the meeting. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Debbie. Also, there's a setup position available. Please see me after the meeting if you'd like to participate in that. Also, short business meeting, when? July 27th?
We postponed it, right?
Okay.
We're up
the retreat for the weekend.
Okay, so it's July 27th now?
Yeah.
Is that a Saturday?
Or we can postpone it. We'll postpone it for now. We'll postpone the August 3rd business meeting, and then I'll get back to everyone. Okay, July 27th, 5
right.
o'clock, business
July
meeting.
July.
And
five ten.
We'll be discussing recording equipment, and also, I don't know if this was mentioned, the men's retreat. I have flyers for the men's retreat. It's the first weekend of August. Please see me after that. Great experience. And that, any other OA-related announcements? No, those were covered. Oh, there is. Oh, go ahead, Laura. Okay, do we vote now? Okay, well... All in favor of passing the basket around twice for this purpose? Okay. Is there anyone opposed? Okay, so... All right, we'll pass the basket twice. Sure.
My name's Kathy. Oh, a member of our fellowship, Priscilla, if anyone knows, is still in the hospital. She was hoping to be out next week, but we just heard today that she has another infection. So if you could just keep praying for her.
Okay, thank you, Kathy. And to close the meeting, Murray, would you like to read a vision for you, followed by a prayer of your choice?
I'm Murray, I'm a compulsive overeater.
Murray.
A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the compulsive overeater who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.